This week's podcast, Harriet Walker, dietitian, is in the house to talk about what to expect when starting that diet journey.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me back again.
Oh, Harriet, you're good value. We love having you on board. But what it's really important about today we're going to talk about is how am I going to feel when I start a diet? Like, what can I expect? What are little things that come from the left field that really throw me out? What are the things that make me feel shit? What are the things that make me feel good?
We're going to make sure that you guys are prepared. Preparation equals success. So let's tuck into it.
Preparation equals success. Could be the name of the podcast. I like it.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. Today's podcast is brought to you by Hydroxyburn Shred Ultra Nootropic Thermogenic. Shred Ultra is scientifically engineered to shred body fat, ignite metabolism, and boost all-day energy while enhancing cognitive performance, focus, clarity, and mood. It combines powerful fat-burning thermogenics, Garcinia, green coffee bean, guarana, caffeine, and an industry-leading 4 grams of acetyl L-carnitine with potent nootropic ingredients at effective therapeutic doses to give you maximum results.
Welcome to Body Science, the house of fit, happy, healthy. And today we're going to talk about dieting. Not just what diet, which diet, how should I diet, but how am I going to feel when I diet? What's going to happen when I start dieting? And what should I be ready for when I'm dieting? And there was a word you said on the intro that I really liked was...
success equals preparation.
That's a great way to start this. What do you mean by that?
Preparation equals success, actually. I got that mixed around the wrong way.
Did you? Does it really matter?
It's palindromic. It can go both ways, really. Yep. So I've got my podcasting hat on and we're going to duck into this. So the first thing we're looking at here is a lot of people will jump into a diet without actually really knowing what to expect. They might not have ever made any changes to their diet, which...
can it be fun, Harriet?
It can be fun. I think you can... obviously, healthy eating can be very exciting, Greg.
Yeah, plates
it's
are colourful.
Yeah. There's lots of delicious, healthy food going into your body.
Quality time, preparing.
Brain function's going to go through the roof because of those micronutrients. But there are a few things that people probably get a little bit unhinged on. They're not prepared
Friday night,
for example.
Saturday breakfast.
We are going to walk.
Saturday night out.
We're going to walk you through some
Sunday
of the
barbecue.
Things. Oh.
Sunday session. None of those have the word diet attached to them unless you're ready.
No, exactly. So we want to make sure that you have the tools in your toolkit to get through making changes to your diet to make sure you're successful. Preparation is key here. So the first one we're going to look at is a meal plan, or anytime you're making changes to your diet for the better. It is about, there has to be an element of trial and error. You're going to try some stuff. Some things are going to stick, other things are not. The thing that gets people the most is when they're going for pure perfection. There is zero such thing.
There's no cap on perfection because you can always do better.
You can always do better. It's a moving feast. Excuse the pun.
You can't say moving feast when you're talking diet tips. Like, seriously.
No, it is a moving feast. It is about trial and error. The thing that gets people the most is when they're like, oh, I've been so good week one. I've been so good. And then they go, oh, but over the weekend I stuffed it. And so now I am going to throw it all in the bin.
So we need to establish that eating pattern is what you're saying to sustain long-term goals.
Yeah, I think it takes, minimum 2-3 weeks to feel like you're getting some runs on the board.
And can we just talk about that 2-3 weeks now? Like, is that stay true, don't deviate? Like, really, is it like creating a habit? Do we have to really hammer those first 2-3 weeks?
It's like learning any new skill. There is a period of time.
I'm not going out. I'm not going to see anyone. I'm not going to leave the house.
Those things are skills too. Being able to navigate eating out is a skill. So I think in the first couple of weeks, it's about, it's always going to be a little bit harder to learn a new skill. You have to concentrate a little bit more. Think about driving a manual car. You remember the first time you were bunny hopping a manual car? Look, I don't know.
I'm 50. I saw them.
Ye oldie.
I don't think my kids know what a manual car is though. So you need to take some time to get into the swing.
Yeah. And the thing that is really important.
Why do you say 2-3 weeks?
That is anecdotal from what I expect people to, take a couple of weeks to figure out, okay, when am I going to go shopping? When am I going to do my food prep? What are some of the things that might go wrong? And instead of seeing any of those little trip ups that you might have in the first few weeks and even like ongoing, instead of seeing them as, dire failure and the reason to throw in the towel, we want to get curious about it. Why did it happen? And what can you do better next time? That means that we're collecting data, we're, you know, figuring out better ways to do things, getting more efficient. It's the same way as you would approach any big project, any work project, or anything that requires change. You know, we need a plan, but we also need to be able to change that plan if it's not going right. So the first couple of weeks, and it might be longer for some people, depending on where you're starting from in terms of nutrition knowledge and skills and all that jazz, we need to make sure that we're not going in with a really rigid, perfect, imperfect mindset. We want to go in with the viewpoint that, okay, I'm starting out, I'm going to fail a couple of times, or I'm going to have a couple of trip ups or things that are a little bit difficult, but I'm going to go and I'm going to do my best I can. And if something happens, I'm going to do better next time.
Yeah, nice, nice. So that first 2 to 3 weeks, a lot of trial and error as you've been talking about, and that's finding, what I mean by trial and error, trying to find out what works for you, what doesn't.
Yeah.
Can I expect to see some really quick results straight away?
If you're playing your cards right and making changes to your diet that are sustainable, you will find the first, I'd say, 4 weeks, you might see a bit of change,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of body composition, it takes a long time to grow muscle. It takes quite a bit of effort, consistency to drop body fat. Yep. I mean, I can get anybody to drop, you know, 2 or 3 kilos in a week. Mainly that's going to be water weight. So in essence,
weight's not weight, is it?
Weight's not weight. It's not weight. You know, weight is your relative, you know, relationship with gravity. You know what I mean? So when we're looking for body composition change, it takes time. Most people expect, because of all the quick fad diets that are out there, that in the first week they should be dropping 2 or 3 kilos. And if you're doing, you know, those sort of dietary approaches, you kind of can expect that. But you can also expect that to not be sustainable and not be something that's going to hang around. So I would say 4 to 6 weeks, you kind of just got to sit on your hands, do the work, and then you'll start seeing changes happening. You know, energy levels are probably the first thing that you'll see. You'll, you know, start feeling better, probably sleeping a bit better, getting through your workouts better. Then after that, you might experience those changes with, you know, clothes fitting differently, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
And in that first 4 weeks, what is more important from a long-term perspective of finding your rhythm and you know, you haven't found not every day has been perfect. What are the important things here? Is it energy levels, how I'm feeling and where I'm at in life? Or is it, gee, I'm on the scales, I'm only 3 kilos down. What's the most important thing here? Look, we just started this journey and I'm feeling $1 million, but I'm not losing weight. Should I be going, oh, stressing that I'm not losing weight? Or should I be going, I'm feeling $1 million?
I will always go with the feel factor, because at the end of the day, you know, life is far too short to be feeling anything. You know, we're not going to feel great all the time. We know that. But, you know, making changes towards a healthier diet, towards more exercise, is about the feel factor. And if it doesn't feel good while you're doing it, then, you know, what's the point? You'll see a lot of people talk about, you know, being shredded all year round and whatnot. There's a lot of effort that goes into that stuff. And a lot of the time it means, you know, getting rid of social occasions, feeling lightheaded, feeling depleted, feeling like lackluster. You see, you know, reduction in mood, hormone levels, all of those things to look a certain way. So they might look good objectively, but subjectively they may very well and very commonly feel crap and they're socially isolated. So there's a happy medium in there, but I always go for the feel factor. The feel good factor is super important, and that's really why we do it. You know, we want to be feeling good and making the most of our lives. So the healthy changes should be geared towards feeling good. When you feel good, you're going to want to keep going. And I think that's a really good happy side effect of making healthier choices.
So you're saying hang tight, do the work, the change will come with consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the, oh, I fucked up, another sprint, or oh, stuffed up again, another sprint.
Yep.
It's getting it right over that first 4 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so over that first 4 weeks, what type of things am I going to feel?
I think, I mean, it depends where you've started from. If you're somebody who's got a, you know, a diet that's mainly processed foods and they're not eating many vegetables and they might be skipping meals,
headaches.
Yeah, like I've had a couple of clients who have gone from eating a very highly processed diet to consuming, you know, mainly homemade foods. And one of the biggest things was a big reduction in sodium in their diet. Yeah. So they've gone from very processed foods, which are higher in sodium. They were actually getting really thirsty and like they weren't drinking enough water. So, you know, we had to change things up. We actually had to get them to add a little bit of salt to their food because a little bit of headachy because of the decrease in their usual sodium intake, which is a funny side effect of reducing the processed foods in your diet. So getting them to drink a little bit more water, getting them to maybe add a little bit of salt. And, you know, in the context of a healthy diet, adding a a bit of salt to your food, if you're not consuming a bunch of processed food, is actually okay. It helps, you know, retain water and keep you hydrated. So, you know, some people can find headaches can be a side effect. Obviously, if it's consistent, you need to go check in with your doctor on those things. Really important. And also, if you're making big changes, do check in with your doctor before you start. But yeah, I mean, one thing, some of the side effects you might feel, maybe a little bit hungry. I mean, it depends. If you've never sort of mindfully eaten, if you've just gone meal, snack, snack, meal, snack, snack, meal, and then all of a sudden you've got a little bit of a gap between meals, it might take a couple of weeks to adjust. I don't recommend people let themselves feel very, very hungry. But if we're using a scale of, say, 1 to 5, 1 being Christmas Day, I'm stuffed, couldn't fit another thing in me. 5 being I'm about to like run off the road, I'm hangry, shaky.
Nobody likes hangry.
We don't want to get down that angle at all. A little bit of, you know, a little bit of a hunger, a little bit of a drive to eat before your next meal is where it's at. That's, you know, that's, you know, our body cues us to eat, and listening to those cues is a really important part of changing up your diet, because you want to listen to those hunger cues and those satiety cues on the other end of that. So eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full, madness.
And to get around that and making your diet work, I assume you're going to tell people to prepare a couple of meals, have some things in the fridge at work and freezer at work and
absolutely.
At home.
Yeah? So preparation is really a big factor in it, because, I mean, we've all been caught out where we've let ourselves get too hungry. I know I've done this where I might be in a meeting over lunchtime.
You're like that 10 minutes ago.
To all those barbarians who, you know, put lunch meetings on. If you can't eat during that time and it's 2, 2.30 when you get out, it can be a situation where your blood sugar level or like low, you're really hungry and all you want to do is just get something to get, you know, your appetite satisfied. So I have eaten all sorts of, you know, whatever's the closest thing to me, lollies, chips, chocolates, whatever. And if you're in an office where those things are readily available, that's what's going to happen, because you're just like, I just need something to tide me over. So having something prepared, eating when you're starting to feel a little bit hungry helps, because you're not going to do those sort of big lunges of starving and then full, starving and then full, pleasantly hungry, pleasantly full. But it also avoids those sort of hangry snacking occasions where we tend to go for the less optimal choices.
So that I'm not stressed about being on a diet and my next meal and perfection, what's your little tip there in relation to doing that meal planning?
One really simple one is, I mean, obviously meal prep for the whole week is possible, and you see that on Instagram.
People, that's a tough gig though, let's be honest. Unless you get into the
Tupperware.
I see the meals laid out, and congratulations anyone doing that.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it takes 3-4 hours.
My idea of meal prep is, hey, I cooked 2 steaks last night instead of 1. I'm having steak for lunch.
I put 2 pieces of pizza in a Tupperware container and there's a bit. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, Shree does it every night. Like, she creates extra salad, rings her salad, a little piece of meat from things. She does her dinners that way, and that's her meal prep
and
every day.
That's how it's done. So you can
that's a hack. So there's no real long-term.
No doubling up on.
Yeah, because her meals are smart in the first place. So she's not going, oh, I need to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're cooking for 2 people or 1 person, it is just as easy to cook double that. You know, there's no extra time involved in that. Maybe a little bit of extra stirring. I don't know.
But that's a good life hack too. Like, that's one of the big things when you start a diet is, gee, I've got to do this. It's hard. Oh, the plan, this or that. There's a lot of things going through your head.
Analysis paralysis is a really big one. Yeah. But what is important is to make the steps small enough that you'll do them. When you make the steps too big and you're not doing them, that to me is a sign that the change is too large, because when the discomfort of staying the same is greater than the discomfort of changing, you're going to make a change.
Yeah.
But if the discomfort of change is too much, you're going to stay with the discomfort of staying the same, because, I mean, we need to make the changes small enough that they're actionable. And one really actionable step is making double dinner, halving it and packing some away for the next day.
Also better than throwing those veggies out at the end of the week when you clear out the fridge for your next shop. You know, there's a lot of wastage when we look at food and what we're doing.
Absolutely.
A hack going to speed your life up, plus also reduce your waste is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I throw all those semi-dead vegetables into a soup.
Yep.
So, and soup is a really fantastic way of filling up without.
Well, while we're here, look, we're talking about what to expect when I start a diet, but let's do the Harriet soup diet quickly. What do? Water?
I do your carrots, your garlic, your onion, celery. So that's your basic. Chop those up, put them in with a bit of olive oil, bit of butter if you're feeling exciting.
Keto lovers.
I'll sweat those down because I'm a chef.
What does sweat them down mean?
I mean, just cooking them so they're translucent, softened.
Okay.
You might throw some bay leaves in there at that stage, salt and pepper. And then I'm throwing in the vegetables, some stock. So you can either have it as a clear stock, like a chicken stock, and then have the vegetables floating around in that. Yep. Or I'll put all the vegetables in, all the stock in, let it cook for a bit and then blend it so it's a thicker soup.
Oh, yeah, nice.
It's not rocket science.
Good hack.
Can
you freeze that?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Get it out of the freezer if you don't have time.
Yep.
One of the big things you mentioned in previous podcasts too, just in relation to that first few weeks, is sticking some frozen veggies, getting some tins of tuna, those type of things are in places where you work, where you hang.
Yep.
And at that home. So when you do come home busy, you don't have time.
Yep. This is a very big point to cover. The thing that most influences our food choices is not the meal plan per se, it's the food environment. So if your food environment is not geared towards making good choices, it's about nudging. So when we make little nudges in workplaces, it's like changing the chocolate box to a fruit box or, you know, a body science snack box. It's about putting the snacks closer to you that are healthy, putting away the other stuff that's not so healthy, out of sight, out of mind. Food environment is really important. So if you know that there's somewhere that you are frequently, it might be at home, it might be the office, it might be the car. Might be your besties place. It's having the conversation with them about, okay, I want to make better choices. I'm going to make those choices readily available. So it's the easy option. Again, we're making it actionable. We're not making it too hard. So the food environment, assessing that and changing it up. I know people with kids sometimes be like, well, that, you know, they've got their snack foods and sometimes I eat those when I'm hungry. It might be a matter of just putting it all into a big Tupperware container and putting them up the back. And it's
colored Tupperware container. Can't see through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an opportunity for, you know, a bit of role modeling as well. I mean, kids, you know, monkey see, monkey do. So if kids are seeing you eat healthier snacks, then hey, it's got a flow on effect there as well.
I don't believe in that, but I'll let you say that. You're a dietitian.
But yeah, so a food environment is super important.
So don't fear going off track. That's one of your big things you're saying there, like the food environment.
Yeah.
Be ready for it. Talk to people. Yep. Like you mentioned, tell your friend if you're going to stay at their place that, hey, I'm like this. Like, don't be afraid to have those chats.
Yeah, look, I mean, I always say this to people in your inner circle, you know, the people that you see the most, people who need to support you, they're the ones that you want to have those conversations with. Then there are the people in your outer circle, the ones who they might be colleagues or people that you don't, you know, they don't necessarily have your best interests at heart, which, you know, is a tough one to sort of think about.
Yeah, but party mates.
I find in workplaces especially, those people who are always going to try and derail you for whatever reason, if you're making healthy choices, it, you know, it's not a reflection on what they do, but they choose to take it as a reflection on what you're doing. I would always say as little as possible to those people. Don't explain yourself. Don't apologize. Don't try and justify what you're doing. If you're in a workplace and Susan has asked if you want a piece of cake, I would just politely decline and don't say because I'm trying to eat healthy. Just say no thanks, because it means that they don't have anything to run with. They're not going to try and twist your arm, as when it's less likely to twist your arm. I just find that it's quite common in workplaces that people who are not on the same journey as you try to, for whatever reason, derail. Giving them as little fodder as possible tends to help.
Nice. So I've started my diet. This is about what to expect when I'm dieting. Mm-hmm. How do I get my head around learning portions, sizes, even meal timing, how much time for food prep, what's the appropriate amount of foods to look at? Like, how do they're all big questions when you're looking at.
Yeah,
and,
it's huge.
And obviously, it's about hacks. It's about how to make things simple. And I've used that word several times. I don't apologize for that. But to me, you know, we've done a lot of podcasts on diets, and satiety comes up all the time as one of the key drivers.
Yes.
But it's also the simplicity of it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do I, like, I don't want to sit there with scales and weigh my food. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. Yep. Like, how do we get around that?
It's important to know what serve sizes look like. I think a lot of people have what we call in the dietitian world, the portion distortion. What you think is a reasonable size is actually
how many Red Bulls you had today?
Not enough, actually. Okay.
You're on fire.
I'm not slurring my words, am I?
No.
No, what happens is what you think you're in, what your stomach wants and what your body actually needs are two different things.
Why is that?
I think it's just because we're humans and food is delicious, and sometimes we serve ourselves up more and we get through it and we're overly full. So recalibrating what you know to be a serve size is a really important factor in all of this. I would encourage people to, if they haven't looked into serve sizes, I mean, meal plans.
Let's get those training wheels off. How do we do it?
I mean, meal plans are not a forever tool. You know, they're not.
They're a good
guide. They're a good guide. And
it's like a learning tool.
People will fight me on this one. Mm-hmm. I never give somebody a meal plan and tell them this is all you can eat. Like, this is all we, you know, it's a tool and it's their training wheels.
That's why you're not a coach.
And it helps recalibrate what's an amount of food that is probably close to what that person should be consuming. Because some people just don't know.
And I see a lot of people start a diet on Monday. They're so rigid and they do everything right. They eat the plan. They go out Friday night because they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they actually do a lot more damage than what they would have if they probably stayed in the game they're on.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, very commonly people will go out on their own devices and cut more calories than is necessary. They'll take their energy budget and they'll halve it.
Mm.
And that's fine for 5 days, but they will get to Friday and sometimes even Thursday. Thursday's a very common day for people to just lose their mojo and go completely off.
Is that right?
Again, anecdotal.
Late night shopping?
Because they go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm being good, I'm being good.
Yeah.
Thursday, by that stage, they've run through a fair bit of their energy and they're getting a little bit depleted.
Yeah.
You know, their motivation's a little bit lower. And again, this is anecdotal. This is just from what I see. And they end up overeating Thursday, Friday, and then it's sort of all over Red Rover. And that really occurs when you've cut too much out of your diet.
Okay.
So there's a calorie deficit and there's a calorie deficit.
Yep.
We want to create a small calorie deficit in order to change our body composition. But if we go from full to 50%, we're going to get hungry and we're going to fall off the bandwagon very, very quickly. So initially it's about, I mean, getting some sort of structure to follow.
Yep.
Because if you're completely in the dark and you've never done anything with your nutrition and you know you should probably make a change to improve your health, to say that you don't need a meal plan is, it's good to see how it can be done. Of course, it's not the perfect for every, you know, it's not the perfect solution for everybody, but it's a starting point and it gives people a structure to roll off. And after some time, they might decide that instead of having 6 meals a day, they prefer 3. Or instead of 3 meals, they like 3 main meals and 2 snacks. That's a part of the journey of figuring out a pattern of eating that suits you. But I think sending people off in the dark by saying, just eat more veggies and whatnot, there needs to be a certain amount of structure to it. You know, getting people to weigh out a serve size or using a cup, you know, a half a cup, a quarter of a cup, getting into the kitchen and actually experimenting with those things is important. It's tangible. And when people actually serve it out themselves, it's also taking responsibility. Like, oh, I didn't know. It's like, well, okay, get in there and have a look. What does it look like? You know, you can always go back to your hunger levels and go, okay, was that enough food? And if you're starving, hey, add some more in the next meal. But I just find it really funny. People, you know, totally slam meal plans. And in essence, you know, they can be very restrictive if they're followed as, you know, without any context and without any guidance. But for some people, I mean, as a dietitian, we're very privileged in knowing so much about food. Then there's plenty of people that I come across who know nothing about food. And they're like, oh, you don't need a meal plan. I know all this stuff, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, it's about building people's skill and confidence and giving them the confidence to make their own decisions long term. And for the first part of that, they might need a little bit of hand holding. That might look like a meal plan. For some people, that's a complete disaster, but that's why it also helps to get qualified information in the first place.
So if I'm sitting there thinking, gee, I want to start the My Body Science diet, or I want to start my own diet leading mm-hmm. into summer.
Yep.
What are some of the things that I should get my head around before I push the go button?
I think figuring out how much time you actually have to dedicate to meal prep. So if you are a parent of 4 children, both, you know, or you're working full time, you might have a partner, but, you know, figuring out, okay, how much time do I actually have to dedicate to meal prep? Some people might have more time than others, but if you're setting yourself up for failure, if you're expecting to be able to do 4 hours of meal prep on a Sunday, but you've actually got to take, you know, little Jimmy to soccer and Sally to karate or whatever,
yeah.
You know, you might be able to do it for 1 week, but then you lose confidence because you're like, well, I did it for 1 week and then it was just too hard. So assessing how much time you have to dedicate to it and then making time, but then also, look, you can outsource or you can ask for help or you can look at what's the next best option.
Yep.
So figuring out how much time you have, I mean, getting across, you know, what food groups are, You know, what's a good source of protein? What's a good source of carbs? What's a good source of fat? I ask people this stuff and very commonly they're like, oh, yeah, no, I know that stuff. I'm like, okay, well, you know that they're like, oh, peanut butter for protein. And you're like, well, actually, I mean, you laugh.
I love peanut butter.
Really commonly, you know, touted as a really good source of protein.
Yep.
It's got some protein in it, but it's actually predominantly a fat source. So actually
tastes so good.
Taking some time to do some reading, there's some lots of really great resources out there. You know, the Body Science website has got like oodles of really great articles and podcasts.
Yeah, we have done a lot of podcasts and get on board and subscribe and listen and enjoy them because there's some smart people talking on these.
Yeah, this is as good as if you applied some of the stuff that we actually talk about, you know, you're going to be on a pretty good wicket. But, you know, making sure that you spend some time to actively engage in learning, you know, don't just listen to what your mate told you. Ask why, you know, it's a part of being an active learner. You're not just going to go to your accountant and tell them to like ask them, you know, which home loan you're going to have without being an active participant in that choice. It's the same thing with nutrition. You know, you need to be asking questions about why certain things, you know, are in your diet and why they're important. So doing a little bit of research and becoming, you know, a little bit more confident in that as well.
So the food prepping, the research and the why.
Yep.
Last thing is talking to your tribe, letting them know that you're on a diet. Like that's your last big thing to expect. Like you can't expect to have results if you don't have people backing you.
You know, I think it's important to, you know, some people might, you know, you might be asking your partner to help you eat healthy, more healthily. So that might be changing date night to something a little bit healthier or reducing the numbers of eating out occasions. So you might be getting the kids to make a meal once a week if they're old enough. Use what you've got around you. Use those resources. You know, if it's at work and the work's a big problem, hey, have a chat to your manager or your supervisors around how we can actually facilitate a healthier workplace. Because I have these conversations weekly about like, oh, I know, but like then we have these work things and I feel obliged to eat cake or drink beer or whatever. Sometimes you got to have those honest conversations.
Yep.
And if people don't support you once you've asked, then that's their problem and they're not on your team.
Yep.
So it's a really great way of showing up who's, you know, really got your back and who doesn't.
So the last little tip that I'd like you to share with everyone is what to expect when we're having a diet, when we get asked to go out.
Yep. Okay. That's a really good one.
Because you don't want to become couch driven Friday night by yourself because you're on a diet.
No, absolutely not. I remember one of the most isolating things when I was prepping for a bodybuilding comp was I went out. I still made sure I went out. I'd have my lime juice, soda water. But even though I was sitting at the table eating food with people, I was eating different food. And that's okay if that's your personal preference. Like, you know, we all eat different foods when we go out to dinner, but I was eating out of like a Tupperware container and I felt really isolated because what we forget is that we don't just eat for sustenance and for energy and whatnot. We also eat to share, to connect. There's, you know, there's a real ritual behind eating. And when we choose an approach to diet or exercise that becomes inhibitory, that becomes isolating, it is a red flag for me that perhaps you've either gone too far or you need to get some help on how to navigate that stuff. So first thing is, look, if you're trying to make a healthy change, a part of long-term success is being able to go out with your friends.
Yep.
If it's once a week, or you might have times where you go 3 weeks in a row when you can just kind of eat, you know, homemade and keep it pretty simple and, you know, go with your plan, your personal plan, and then you might have two events in a week. Don't freak out about it. You know, if I think, I explain this to my clients, there's 365 days in a year. If 10 of those days are a complete write-off, you've still done some solid work.
Yeah.
If 20 of those days were a write-off, you've still done some really solid work. It's just when you give up completely for a week and then you go for 2 days again and then give up for another complete week. So going out, enjoy yourself, but just make sure you go into with the attitude of, I'm going to enjoy this, but then I'm just going to get back to my healthy eating routine. And, you know, doesn't have to be a matter of healthy, unhealthy. I think it is just as healthy, but not necessarily in a macronutrient perspective, to be able to go out and eat with your friends. That's healthy in a social way, which, you know, put that into your plan. It's really important. So I would choose your battles wisely. I would say, okay, I'm going to choose the girls' night out and date night or those special family occasions and just enjoy myself and have my food prepared for the next day, you know, not skip meals or anything, just, you know, be a bit more conscious about it. But then there might be an office, you know, if you look across your week and there might be two office morning teas and then two family dinners. I'd be choosing the office morning teas, unless like your office, you know, your workmates are your besties, and that's going to be a good social occasion. You know, make a few compromises. You might just choose to have, you know, water and a cup of tea when you go to your morning tea at lunch at work, and then enjoy yourself on those other times. There's a bit of compromise that's required, but I think, you know, and if you're eating out more than once in a week, if there's more than one social occasion that you really want to go to, then, you know, choose one of them or two of them, depending on what your goals are, you know, just to eat whatever takes your fancy. But you might choose one of those to aim to create a bit more of a healthy meal. So you might choose, you know, extra veg and a lean cut of meat and get that grilled or something like that. These days,
the chips, get the veggies.
Yeah, these days, you know, there are a lot of options that we can do to eat healthier. Yeah. So it might be, of the three nights out, you might choose two to have the sort of healthier eating out option. And we've talked about this in other podcasts, so you can go back and refer to those ones if you want to know exactly what that is. And then one of them is, you know, you have fun, relax, eat whatever meal. And again, look at the context of a week or a month or a year. Don't look at the context of just one day.
So I think the big tip for what to expect when starting a diet is, don't expect perfect days. Plan for them.
Yep.
Plan the food, plan what you're doing, plan
the
calendar, and do the best you can.
Yep. And then, you know, plan B, plan C, plan D before you give up.
Yep.
You know, make sure you've got options, ask for help, reach out, you know, outsource. All of those things are other options that aren't perfect, but because perfect doesn't exist, they are completely viable.
Nice. And if I'm always feeling hungry when I'm on a diet,
probably look at increasing your energy intake a little bit. Reassess.
Look to put more veggies on your plate.
Mm-hmm. Increase the volume with lower calorie foods.
Yeah, good tip.
But if you're starving the whole time, again, that's a red flag to me that you could probably
go and talk to a professional.
Yeah, get some help with
that. Grab a dietitian. Where are we grabbing those from?
We got Dietitians Association Australia, Sports Dietitians Australia. You got lots of really fantastic and enthusiastic people on your team.
Fantastic. Just get out there and enjoy yourself, kids, and do it properly by thinking before you start.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
That was good, Harriet. These little quick ones you do are great little tips for us when we're going for walks in the morning.
Yoo-hoo!
Remember to subscribe, people. Body Science Podcast.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.